Good evening. Following my broadcast about the captain's well in Amesbury, Massachusetts, we received several requests for the romantic story of the Agnes Surridge Well in Marblehead. You can find it easily, just off Orne Street, close to the old brig, better known as the home of Moll Pitcher, the fortune teller. If you've ever taken the youngsters to Red's Pond in Marblehead and wandered through the old burial ground while they sailed their boat, you probably looked right down on the Agnes Surridge Well and the spot where the Fountain Inn stood, surrounded by apple trees. In those days, Marblehead wasn't the delightful spick-and-span place it is today. Then it consisted of clusters of dingy, thatched-roof fish houses, clinging to the rocks like herons' nests in a rookery, and like them, smelling very strongly of fish. Pathways just wide enough for a fish cart wound in and out every which way, and on either side were lobster pots and wood piles, old nets and dories, and new stacks of codfish drying in the sun. There were two small chapels, a nondescript school, one tavern, and the impressive townhouse. A few fine residences had been put up, but the stately homes of Elbridge Gerry, Azer Orne, General John Glover, and the Pedrick House and the Lee Mansions were not built until a later day. In April 1742, the year in which this romantic story began, the General Court of Massachusetts granted a sum of £550 for the construction of a fortress at Marblehead, and three of its leading citizens took charge of the money, keeping it in an iron-bound chest and doling it out under the watchful eye of a colonial officer sent down from Boston. Already crowded with fishing captains, pirates, and privateers, the Fountain Inn was now taxed to capacity with officers and engineers working at the fort, making it necessary for landlord Sawkins to hire extra help. And among the young ladies he hired to wait on tables, wash dishes, and make beds was the buxom daughter of Ed Surridge, a local fisherman. Her job was to scrub the floors at the Fountain Inn, and she was down on her knees with brush and sand on this warm June morning in 1742 when she heard someone enter the taproom. He was the new collector for the port of Boston, and being hot and thirsty from his trip, he tapped impatiently on the bar for a glass of good cold ale. Finally, Sir Charles Harry Franklin spoke. "I say, anyone here to wait on me?" Getting no answer, he stepped into the hall, and there in the dark corner by the stairs was the kitchen wench, busy with her scrub brush and bucket. Startled, the girl rose to her feet, smoothing her damp and dingy dress over slender brown ankles and bare feet. Pursing her red lips, she puffed a loose strand of shiny black hair from her eyes and curtsied. And as she came forward into the light, Sir Harry, a connoisseur of such things, noted that under her drab and dingy dress was a figure of uncommon loveliness. What Agnes Surridge saw made her heart skip, for this was the most beautiful gentleman she'd ever seen. Standing there in the doorway in his powdered wig, purple coat, and lace ruffle and sleeves, he was enough to turn the head of any young lady just turned 16. Awkwardly, she tried to hide one bare foot behind the other, blushed and stammered, "What can I get you, sir?" "I'd like to see the landlord." "The landlord is over to the fort. Would a mug of musty be to your lordship's liking?" "Why, it would indeed." And as Agnes Surridge skipped off to fetch it, Sir Harry Franklin may have whistled softly under his breath. When she returned with a foaming mug, cold and pungent, he drank deeply and said, "So this is the Fountain Inn, best tavern in town, I presume. Good or bad, there's none but the fountain, and with all them as is working at the fut, 'tis filled to the rafters we be. Have you been here long, miss?" "'Tis not 3 months gone yet since I come from the cove, sir." "You prefer working here to being at home, I suppose?" "Oh, 'tis willy-nilly I come and willy-nilly I stay, methinks." And just then the shadow of the lawn lard fell across the threshold, and Agnes Surridge, the scullery maid, scuttled back to her mops and bucket. Sir Harry hadn't intended to tarry in the old tavern overnight, but he did, and after a good night's rest, he awoke with the first cocks crowing. Thrusting his head out the open window, he breathed deeply, the salty air mellowed with the perfume of apple blossoms in the adjacent orchard. Looking down, he saw Agnes Surridge drawing a bucket of water from the well, the same well you can see in Marblehead today. As he watched, Agnes tossed back her head and began to sing, a funny, rollicking song of the sea, which Sir Harry didn't understand. But the music that poured from her young red lips was full and natural, and as his eager eyes followed the well-formed girl, he said under his breath, "What a glorious sight she would be in a ball gown." Well, after breakfast, Sir Harry strolled out to the well and waited. And when Agnes arrived, he lifted the heavy bucket, poured the crystal clear water into her pail, and as she reached for it, he pressed a gold coin between her slim, wet fingers. "For the lawn lard, 'tis it?" "No, it's for you, Agnes, for the song you sang." "'Tis gold, is not it?" For what for can I do with gold? Well, you could buy shoes and stockings. Don't you ever wear them? I thought I do in meeting in snow. I thanked you, sir. And with a cute little curtsy, she bounded off, splashing the water from the bucket and blushing right back to her tiny shell-pink ears. All the way back to Boston, the collector of the port tried to keep his mind on facts and figures connected with the new fort. But the fair face and figure of Agnes Surridge kept bobbing up to bother him, but pleasantly. It wasn't too many weeks before Sir Harry found it necessary to pay another visit to Marblehead. Bashful barefoot Agnes was more alluring than before. I see you haven't bought your new shoes yet. Oh, sir, but I have. But I'm saving of them to wear to church. And when it's crimey out. Thank you kindly, sir. By the way, Agnes, how old are you? I be 16, sir, just past. And where did you learn to sing? Sing? Oh, I don't have to learn to sing, sir. I just opened me mouth and that is. Why you ask such funny questions? With the easy casualness of a gentleman born to the purple, Sir Harry explained that in England, where he come from, young ladies were taught to sing and play musical instruments, and some learned to paint and dance and write poetry. Oh, I can write my name, Agnes said. The minister showed me. Sir Harry laid his bejeweled fingers on Agnes' arm. If you would like to become a lady, and have pretty things to wear, and learn to play and sing, and have nice dresses, I think it could be arranged. How would you like to live in Boston, Agnes?
I don't know, sir. I've never been so far away as that. Where would I bunk down, come dark?
Sir Harry laughed. I have a good friend who would look after you, a Mrs. Shirley, with 7 children of her own. Her husband is the governor. Agnes, already in love with the older man, but doubting that any such Cinderella existence could ever be for her, said wistfully,
"Long to read and scribble, eh? And have fine clothes, be like a lady. Well, I could help with the work. Has Mrs. Shirley any pigs I can feed?"
That evening, the elegantly dressed collector picked his way to the home of the Fisher folks and laid his proposition before Goody Surridge, Agnes's mother. Dame Surridge let him have his way, and then turning to Sir Harry, she said, "'Tis a grand honor you do this humble cottage, but first we'll have to gam with Mr. Holyoake, my minister. You'll know whether it's good nor bad for my girl to go with strangers." Reverend Holyoake looked Sir Harry straight in the eye. "'Tis a grave matter, this, sending a young girl to a big city where Satan hides in every closet." "Without a doubt," said her Harry, taking a pitcher of snuff from a jewel box and not bothering to pass it around. "But remember, sir, I shall be there, too." "Yes, that's what I was thinking about. And I'd like to know, sir, what motive prompts a man of your rank and position to suggest such an unprecedented and improper arrangement." "Tut, tut, tut, now let me finish. Supposing misfortune befell you, what of Agnes then?" "Well, she couldn't be any worse off than she is now, scrubbing floors in the public tavern." And so it came to pass that Agnes Surridge, scullery maid from Marblehead, became the ward of Sir Harry Franklin, collector of the Port of Boston. Spending much time with the governor's family and taught by dancing and singing masters chosen for the first lady, Agnes emerged from her former drab environment like a butterfly from its cocoon. She learned to speak properly and improved her manners. She wore her clothes with the grace of a young princess. The first time Sir Harry saw her sweep down the grand staircase of the governor's mansion in a low-cut, gorgeous gown of white satin and in candlelight, he knew what he had always known. She was the only woman he would ever love. But bitterly he realized that never could he ask the daughter of a fishmonger to become his wife. Why, Boston society would ostracize them, and in England, his proud and aristocratic family would disown and disinherit him immediately. Whenever they appeared together at public functions in the years that followed, they were received with cool politeness, but there was much nodding of powdered wigs and a lot of whispering behind fluttering fans. In fact, they soon became the most talked-about couple in all the colony. To get Agnes away from the snide remarks and sly grins of the gossipers, Sir Harry bought a big tract of land out in Hopkinton, and there he built a magnificent mansion and surrounded it with shrubs, trees, gardens, and fountains. When Agnes wasn't busy planting rare and costly roses imported for her pleasure, she rode through the primeval forest while her guardian shot quail and rabbits, and together they sailed and fished on the limpid ponds. Then suddenly Sir Harry was summoned to England. His uncle, late Lord of the Admiralty, had died, making him a baronet and leaving him a large share of the family wealth. He insisted that Agnes accompany him. But when they reached London, his mother turned a cold shoulder on the fair Agnes and positively refused to accept her. To make matters worse, Sir Harry had to go to court to get what rightfully had been left to him. When this business was settled, the distressed couple went to the continent. And after a brief tour, they repaired to Portugal, where Sir Harry had official business to tend to. On the morning of All Saints' Day, 1755, Sir Harry left Agnes at the hotel and took a carriage to go see a client. The streets were crowded with worshippers on their way to the ancient cathedral. Without warning, there was an ominous rumble. The streets heaved and shook. Buildings swayed and crashed in clouds of dust. The first shock of that fateful earthquake killed hundreds. And in the second blast, the towering wall of a building tumbled into the narrow street, completely burying the carriage of Sir Harry Franklin. Agnes made her way through the wreckage and, after a long search, located the pile of debris where her lover was buried. With her own strong hands, she pulled him from under the stones and timbers. Believing that he had but a few hours to live, Sir Harry Franklin did what he should have done years ago. He called a priest, and there amid the ruins of the earthquake-stricken city, Agnes Surridge of Marblehead became his wife. But Sir Harry recovered, and on the way back to England, they were married again by a minister of the Church of England. Finally, Sir Harry's family accepted them, and Agnes was royally received by the nobility. Sir Harry died at Bath, England, in 1768 at the age of 52, and Agnes returned to America to live in her mansion at Hopkinton until the Revolution broke out. She watched the Battle of Bunker Hill from a window on Beacon Hill and sailed to England shortly afterward. The little fountain inn where she scrubbed floors in her bare feet has long since disappeared, but the nearby well where she toted water in a bucket is still one of the many, many attractions of old historic Marblehead.